This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's time for the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the Ferg Sports Bar and Grill Studios, across from Tropicana Field in downtown St. Petersburg, Florida. Providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps and the pros across Tampa Bay and the USA. Get your head in the game with the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and your hosts, Mike Rickard and Ben Botham.
Welcome back, hour number two of the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. We're live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. You can tell something's going on today. And of course, it's the Firestone St. Pete Grand Prix. And downtown is just very active, my man.
Oh, yeah. This is the reason why people come to St. Pete. I mean, look how great this is. You got Ferg's here. You got the Trop right across the street. You can't beat this on a day, you know, wonderful weather.
It is paradise.
Uh-huh. Certainly is. So I'm loving it. I'm very excited to be here. Any weekend I'm out here with you, Mike.
Well, I miss when you're not here. Hey, Body Armor, we're going to have a conversation with Coach Ernest Crumbly with St. Pete. And then we'll talk to Jake Perper, as I said. And then near and dear to your heart, we'll have some conversation in the world of baseball. So we didn't finish our conversation on some of the baseball topics. So fire away.
Well, there's been some interesting stories kind of going on in baseball. There was the first ever parrot delay, Mike. Did you see this?
No.
Yeah, so in a game between...
Is this a Savannah Bananas
thing? No. This is a women's softball game, a college women's softball game between Bradley and Gardner-Webb. Two African macaws fly onto the field, stopping play.
Seriously?
This was at UCF, and they landed on the home plate umpire, Chad Steers. It landed right
on the umpire,
right on his shoulder. He started walking away with it. They had to bring out the grounds crew to come and carry the bird away. It was unbelievable.
I didn't see that.
Is that
on YouTube?
I think so. I was afraid we're gonna have a little Randy Johnson moment, an explosion if they would have pitched the ball.
Recall that one for me. Randy Johnson hit a bird.
He hit a bird.
And poof, blew it apart.
Poof, exploded.
What, about 98 mile an hour fastball?
That was going pretty quick. That bird didn't see it coming, to say the least. And so at least
these
beautiful macaws were saved. The girls made sure to stop play and even found a safe place to perch on the umpire's shoulder. So that was
pretty I missed that this week.
Also, a really cool thing that they're doing with the pitch com or all that kind of the new pitch calling system that they have on the pitcher's hats. Max Scherzer was calling his own pitches using the pitch com during a spring training start against the Washington Nationals. So he got into a groove. He's getting pitches called to him from the catcher. And then all of a sudden he decides to start sending pitches to the catcher because he felt something, got in his own little groove and started calling pitches. And I thought that was actually kind of neat. You know, I'm usually against these.
I was going to say, you don't like that 21st century technology. But you know why you like it? Because it's a pitcher doing it.
You're not wrong.
You're not kidding me, pal.
And then some sad news. Star pitcher Jean Fout of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League unfortunately passed away this week at the age of 98. She was a two-time Player of the Year and a four-time All-Star and the only professional pitcher, both male or female, to have pitched two perfect games.
Well, in 2020, as I said to you, the Ted Williams Hall of Fame, we had I was working for him then. They had a ceremony, a Hall of Fame ceremony, and they inducted they inducted that movie, and some of the originals came back, and she was one of those ladies, and she was in a walker, and Penny Marshall, you know, who was very instrumental and producer of that movie. And in the movie, her daughter came and accepted the award for her, and she spoke. Well, speaking, we'll talk a little bit about baseball with Mangold. We better switch gears to this March Madness. It's basketball time. This cat, and we just had the Boca Ciega Pirate baseball team on, and he's an alum. He's head basketball coach Ernest Crumbly from St. Pete College. How are you, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you doing today?
Really good. I know you like it down here at Ferg's. I should have had you come down. You could have had some wings and enjoy this gorgeous day. So let's talk about the basketball season this year at St. Pete College. How was your year? Has it ended now? I hadn't looked that up.
Well, we had a the year half ended, and we had not the year I started, wanted to have. We ended up going 16 to 4, but we had 5 surgeries in 1 year. I never had that happen in 30 years of coaching.
I didn't hear you, Coach. We got kind of a, are you on speaker? If you could take us off speaker, I can barely hear you.
No, I'm not. Hold on a second.
Can you hear me now?
So what? Yeah, there you go. So what kind of season did you have?
Well, you had one full of injuries. Five of the 2 guys had surgery. 3 had severe injuries that never recovered, and played with 8 from December until the end of the year. So wasn't this the year we wanted, but it was the year we had, and ended up being 6-24.
Let's educate our audience on the conference that St. Pete College plays in, what level of ball it is. I want to continue to have you on a regular basis, as we do with Eckerd College, and recognize the colleges in the area. So talk about the conference and who you guys play.
Mm-hmm. We're actually the NJCAA Division I, and we're in what we call our Central Conference this year, which consists of most teams from the East Coast of Florida down to Miami.
And how many years have you been there? Yeah, I know you graduated with Boca Ciega, and you know my girlfriend Terry and her sister Lori, and they talk about and Mark Ferguson even chimed in. They talk about what an athlete and legend you were at Bogey, and so you left Bogey. Where'd you go to college at?
Well, had an interesting journey in college. Actually, out of high school, I signed a baseball scholarship to Chipola. And that didn't last but a week. But I ended up going to Arizona Western Community College, played football, and then transferred on to Utah State University and completed my career there.
So back home in the area now. And now you're a basketball coach?
Yeah, actually, I played for Ken Robinson at Boca Ciega. It was my 4 years of high school. So I was kind of a triple dual deck kind of guys. I wasn't a one sport guy. I played football, basketball, 1 year of track, and baseball 3 years.
You know, I look at today's world, and I'm sure you agree to some degree, Ernest. The specialization, these young kids just focusing on one sport, and I think they're doing themselves a disservice, but unfortunately with travel ball and the expectations, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball, and the demands these days, you don't see multi-sport athletes like you were and that successful to be able to garner 2 opportunities at the collegiate level.
Well, you're right. With so many kids, they figure they can only do one thing at one time, and then that's not true. I think, for me at the time, I was always one to be constantly busy. So I would just shuffle from football, shuffle to basketball, shuffle to baseball, and it was a little common thing for me. I did that all my life since I was in Little League, and anything else would have been kind of foreign to me. But today's athletes, they seem like they got to, you know, at 12, they figured out they got to be a basketball player or a football player. My mom made us do it all.
Well, I'm a proponent of it, and if you look at some of the, you know, let's just take the NFL as an example. A lot of the great athletes were multi-sport athletes, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think it could still exist. But as you said, at 12 years old, they figured out that's what they want to do. Well, many times that might be a parental input, unfortunately, instead of letting these kids go on and enjoy the experience of just playing, because less than 1% are going to make it professionally. Less than 1% by far.
I agree. I mean, it's a very tough road to get to the elite level as a professional. It's so competitive. It's ridiculous. I tell my guys even today, I'm saying, look, you know, it's only 30 teams in the league, in the NBA, and you can see how things are now with free agency and in the contracts. You will have a very, very difficult time even just getting to be on the team as a rookie. And then the first 5 or 10 rookies are only guaranteed. The rest of them, none. So, It's tough. It's one in my case. It's like one and one and one 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 zero 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 one. Getting to that. That
precisely. That hey, level. Let's talk about your recruiting. You know, course, it's the state championships this weekend in Lakeland. I saw you at the Sunbash tournament, and you know, I think the state of Florida gets misunderstood from a basketball perspective because there's so much emphasis on football and baseball. But this is one heck of a basketball state, and there's a lot of talent, and it's right in your neighborhood. Are you able to tap that from a recruiting perspective? And if not, where do you get the players?
We do, and actually, as we speak, I'm in Lakeland watching the finals. We try to recruit locally. We had a couple kids from Bowie last year and one on the team. And then we have throughout the state, we recruit Florida kids. And we've had some kids actually from Oklahoma and this year a kid from Africa. So we're pretty much globally in our recruitment, but we try to make sure that we take care of those who are our best athletes in the state if we can. If not, then we branch out. And we've got a interesting year coming because we're going to have a lot of scholarships available for schools, student athletes, and it'll be fun picking them.
Okay, now the Titans, as far as scholarships at that mm-hmm. level, do you have half rides, full rides? Can you meld it in with some financial aid? How do you offer these kids in today's world at your level?
We have exactly what you said. We have some full ride kids, we have some partially ride kids, and we have some guys who walk on, just like any other institution. But we give out 12 scholarships per year to our players, and fortunately, the college has been really, really good with that for us. I really appreciate them for that. And then we try to find what we can't get here in some other places.
Well, and okay, so you're a 2-year program, and yes, kid completes the 2 years with you. Where are you getting the most interest from the D1 programs, or is it across the country that they come looking at Coach Crumley's Titans for potential recruits?
Well, it varies. I mean, we've had a. If you can take us back to the beginning of our situation of the year, we had over 40 Division I coaches come in and watch our pro kids practice in what we call a Florida JUCO tour. And then we also have a mid-season event with the state of Florida. And we probably got more than 100 of those coaches coming in, or it'd be watching them on Streamline or in that case. So recruitment is nationwide. We've got a lot of kids who get opportunity just because we have been in our program. I've been here for 30 years. And in addition to
30 years, did you start when you were 19? When I first met you, 30 years. Oh my word. That one
program. This is my 30th year. It's been a fun ride. It's never been a day of work for me. I enjoy the kids. My whole philosophy for kids coming in is to be educated and then be able to take care of their families and be able to be grown men. That's our mission, to help them grow a little bit, move them on to the next level. Hopefully we've had great success with our guys leading and going on to become professionals. We got 11 guys right now in Europe still playing that played in our program. We got some doctors, we got some lawyers. So it's been a fun 30 years.
Hey, let's talk about the program overall from an athletic perspective, because I don't think a lot of the audience is aware. Well, how many sports does St. Pete College, the Titans, have?
Well, we have men's softball, so men's baseball, and men's basketball. And then we have women's tennis, women's volleyball, women's softball, and women's basketball. So we have six or seven sports that we offer. And all of my scholarship sports and the colleges in the last couple of years have been a great job being managers of that and adding some sports. So we're still growing.
And you play your games right over there off of 66, is that right?
Yeah, our men's basketball team plays on our St. Pete Gibbs campus, which is our Fifth Avenue campus. and as well as our volleyball teams. And our tennis team is out on Treasure Bay in St. Pete here. And then our softball and baseball is up in the Clearwater. Our women's play at Eddie Moore Complex, and our guys play at the Phillies Complex.
Gotcha. Well, I tell you what, you were at that Sunbass tournament, and it was nice to see four of the area teams make it to the Final Four. St. Pete High, of course, Coach Blackwell and Gibbs, and then across the bay, Wharton and Tampa Catholic. Yeah. And all of them went down to defeat, but making it to the Final Four is certainly an accomplishment. I think you'd agree with that.
Big time. It's a big time accomplishment. You can think about how many high schools are not here. And if you can get to the Final Four, even in the final, that is huge. And my hats are off to all those teams who made it over to Lakeland. Coaches have done a great job. I watched some of those programs up close and personal. And even some of the other ones that didn't make it. There's some really good young basketball talent in the Bay Area itself. Hopefully we can get some of that and keep them home and become successful with them.
All right, my friend. Well, next year, I'd like you to come down and bring in several of the players like we do with Eckerd College. I've been over watching some of their Division II, games, and that's a nice caliber of basketball in that Sunshine State Conference.
It's one of the toughest Division II conferences in the country. And if you're not familiar with Florida Junior College basketball, it's between us, Texas, and Kansas are the top three states, top three regions in the country. So we've had three or four teams a year go to the national tournament from our region. There's probably three this year. We got five of in the top 25 and one receiving votes at six. So this is a tough region. You got to have good players. There's a bunch of good coaches in this area, in the National Junior College area, plus there's a bunch of good coaches in this state. So an opportunity for a lot of kids to be re-recruited, get to the next level.
Well, and unfortunately, sometimes, back in my generation, there were junior colleges, now they're community colleges, but JUCO's got a bad rap, like you couldn't get in anywhere else, academically. And that's not the case.
Not at all.
Give us some response to that question that loomed up for years, because we know it's not true. Being from Iowa, I'm very familiar with the Iowa community colleges, and I had a lot of friends coached in them, a lot of success.
Yep.
I knew the Kansas schools. So, dispel that, would you?
Well, I will tell you that if you came and played Florida basketball, junior college, or community college, it'll be something we all call a state college, you're going to have to be either a low to mid-major player if you're going to be really, really good. That's how competitive it is. In addition to that, coaches recruit junior college kids probably after the transfer portal kids, and then they go to the high school. So the pecking order has completely changed in terms of recruitment. And then you have young folks who are coming out of high school that they got to wait their turn, so to speak. So we get a lot of qualifiers in our program. And normally they would have been at Division I, but because of transfer portals and the rules of the transfer portal, the colleges are now taking more guys who play versus guys who just come into programs because they feel like they can win immediately versus trying to develop programs that way. But the stigma of junior college back in the day, you don't have the brains to go to class. This is not what it is in back in the day when you're taking basket weaving. We have no courses like that at our institution. We don't even have PE courses. So you got to make sure you're a good student when you come to college right now in this day and age. And students are trying to measure that against four-year schools, and they realize, for parents particularly, it's a buck-saving kind of thing. Plus, at the end of the day, they're going to get another 30, 60 games in 2 years and be re-recruited. Now they're a little bit more mature. So they've taken all the general ed classes, and then all of a sudden now they can get up right into their major and continue to compete.
Well, Coach, it was a pleasure meeting you at Sunbash, Small World, given the Boca Ciega connection with my girlfriend and her sister, and you being a part of that program. Cool. And then we have Bogey down here today. We've got to get you guys down next year, and I look forward to future conversations with you.
I'll be happy to do it, and then go Pirates, as I'm in that Hall of Fame as well. So,
all right, my man.
That's fun. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Anytime.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ben, that was a nice conversation. I didn't realize they had full rides at the community college level.
Oh, yeah, they certainly do that now. I've even been one to tell some of the younger guys it might even be a better route to go junior college or the JUCOs.
In baseball, you see a lot of that.
Especially baseball now, because what you're going to get, you're going to get a lot more individual one-on-one work at a junior college, and they're going to advance your career as a baseball player further in that short 2 years that you're there for, 1 to 2 years, than you would riding the bench redshirting at a Division One or Division Two school.
Very good point there, because you're getting development and they're playing at a high caliber.
Yeah, especially here in Florida when you have such great teams like SPC. So it makes sense now, especially with the transfer portal. There's no reason, unless you're, you know, LeBron James coming out of high school, to go to a Division One school. It's almost worth it to start with a JUCO or a community college.
Well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk briefly about the little high school up there at Lakeland. We should have got a breakdown from Coach. And then we'll talk baseball the last 20 minutes with Jeff Mangold. He's the former head trainer of the New York Yankees. We'll be back here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, live from Ferg Sports Bar and Grill on an absolute Chamber of Commerce Saturday down here in downtown St. Pete.
Halftime's over. Reset the clock.
We're going to shut them down.
Dial the down.
Do it!
And get your head in the game.
Visualize an attack. Yes. Visualize an attack.
Yes. The Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection, live from the Clubhouse Studios, inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
I take a scotch and water. Hold the scotch.
On the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
This is Mike Rickard, and I personally want to welcome our new supporter and partner, my Iowa friend, Barb with Champa Bay. Barb Grossenheider is with First Class Real Estate Gulf to Bay, and Barb brings her Midwest work ethic, her integrity, her commitment to every client, combined with her knowledge as she grew up in a family of home construction success for decades. Barb's energy and her bubbly personality take the stress out of the challenge of home buying in today's difficult market. I assure you, I've recommended her to my friends, and I look forward to spreading her professional service to all of Champa Bay. So reach out today with Barb from Champa Bay, barbwithchampabay@gmail.com, or give her a call at 813-564-4134. That's Barb with Champa Bay. Give her a call today, 813-564-4134.
Big Storm Brewing Company helps you weather any storm. From their award-winning Bramosa Tangerine IPA to their original Wavemaker Amber Ale, Big Storm has you covered. Give Florida's craft beer forecast a shot today and find out where you can get your Big Storm at BigStormBrewery.com. Enjoy an ice-cold Big Storm at tap rooms located in Clearwater, Orlando, Ybor City, and Odessa.
Pulling out all the stops of the fourth.
All right, let's go.
Time to bring it home with the dub.
Let's get rocking.
Stick to the game plan with a Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Let's rock this joint.
On the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Sports Connection Radio Network. Let's go directly to Jake Perper. Of course, he is the founder of the Sunbash Tournament. We were just talking about him with head coach Ernest Crumley of the St. Pete Titans. And you're probably up there in Lakeland yourself. What's going on, champ?
I am. I'm stepping away from the court because it's so loud. Watching the 4A championship between Maeterlinck and the Villages right now.
Well, you know, you got four teams that advanced up to St. Pete, and that was a success. Unfortunately, all four of them got beaten, but just the accomplishment of making it there. So what other games are you going to be watching today?
Yeah, so like I said, Maeterlinck and the Villages are on now. Next game will be Mainland versus Belen Jesuit, which is a team full of Spanish kids down from Miami. Their tallest guy is 6'2", but they play really fast and have unbelievable guard play. So Mainland is the team that beat St. Pete by 3 2 days ago. So that'll be the 5A championship. And we got the 6A and the 7A championship, which wraps it up between Columbus and Winter Haven, who won on a buzzer beater yesterday against Oak Ridge. So, yeah, a couple more games. It's been a pretty fun week.
Well, I bet it's been an absolute ball for you. Taking a look at the finals, a good mix of teams, but is it primarily from the Orlando and Miami area representation?
The teams that are making it farther have been, pretty much those teams. That's kind of what it is year after year, because that's where they have the most talent, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Gibbs and St. Pete, both of them, that was their return trip. And I know they had visions of hoisting the championship this year, but very close game for St. Pete High against Mainland. I see that. I talked to Coach Blackwell.
Yeah, there was a lot of turnovers. It was low scoring. Mainland likes to play slow. They're long, athletic, so they kind of forced them into their game, but. Yeah, I mean, hats off to St. Pete. Obviously, you know, Tristan Gross going off to Stetson. They got a bunch of guards that, you know, will end up in college as well. And then Dylan Kramer, who's a tough player. They graduate a big senior class, but I'm hearing they're getting some kids in, and they should be fine for next year in Pinellas County. So, and Gibbs, you know, going back to them, they bring back almost everybody besides, like, two pieces. So, you know, they'll be fine in the region that they're in, and I expect them to at least get to the region final, maybe back to Lakeland next year as well.
Well, how do people find you? All your information on high school basketball across the state of Florida. You do a superb job. And, you know, Sun Bash, we're looking forward to diving in 2023 with you all the way in. In fact, we with our new launch, FloridaSportsStream.com, we'll probably come down to Miami and do some broadcasts next year. So looking forward to that. How do people find you, Jake?
Yeah, so Instagram and Twitter. So Instagram is the_hoopvibe. Twitter is thehoopvibe. And then the website is thehoopvibe.com. And I do appreciate the kind words. I've been working on getting teams locked in for Sunbash already next year. So it's a good spot here to be able to network with a lot of coaches.
All right. I know this is your favorite time of the year from a high school perspective. And then, of course, now, basketball junkies, we've got March Madness to carry us for the next 3.5 weeks. So looking forward to that, and we'll get you back on sometime this summer and see what's going on.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
All right. He's Jake Perper, and I know you just sit there and wonder why people have such a passion for basketball. Did you ever try to play basketball?
Yeah, in the YMCA, you know, I think
did they kick you out because you're tackling people?
No.
I mean, in baseball, you throw at people.
Yeah.
You were one of those guys that played that overzealous defense, and they said, hey, you're out.
No, we were actually pretty good at basketball. We won the YMCA elementary school basketball tournament 2 years back.
Dang.
Fourth and fifth grade, Mike. Those were big years for me.
Fourth and fifth were big years in your athletic
big
career.
Years in my in my athletic career for sure. I still got those medals hanging on the band.
Fourth and fifth. Okay, my man. Oh.
That was probably the last time I competitively picked up a basketball.
Did you ever play intramurals at Savannah State?
No, are you kidding me? Me on the court at Savannah State?
Oh, yeah.
No,
I wasn't thinking. You would have got absolutely humiliated.
Half the guys on the baseball team could dunk, and I could barely jump 3 inches off the ground for a line drive.
How did you – did Savannah State find you? Did you find them?
They found me. They came and found me, Mike. I was on the leaderboard for closers in Pinellas County and the state of Florida.
Hit my pitch.
Well, that hadn't happened yet. I might not have informed them about that outing, but I did lead. I led for not strikeouts, but I didn't. I only allowed one hit the entire year, my senior.
Wow.
Year. Yeah, and that was against IMG,
which is a team of pros.
Yeah, and they're unfortunately a team that did knock us out of the tournament, though, for the Georgiadis. We did pretty well at Seminole for the Georgiadis tournament. That's why I was absent last weekend. But it was a good showing we had.
Talk a little bit about this team. We got a few minutes.
Yeah, so the Seminole High School baseball team, we're looking really good right now. We wrapped up our Georgiadis tournament, which I believe is going on its 30-something consecutive year running, making it the oldest tournament in the state of Florida for high school sports. So it's great that we continue that legacy. We had Georgiadis' family out there. He unfortunately passed away after Tommy John surgery. He was slated for a huge career. This was 30 or so years ago. But you know, we made it all the way to the finals. Seminole, we beat Lakewood, Boca Ciega, Pinellas Park, and Northeast. All but Pinellas Park, we 10 run, and we lost unfortunately in the championship 4-8. But this past week, we had three games. We swept it. Most recent, or the first game of the week, we defeated St. Pete Catholic in a 5-0.
You did?
Yep, 5-0 against St. Pete Catholic. We had two pitchers combined for a shutout. We started with Tyler Saunders, who grounded out, scoring one run. And Tyler actually pitched that game as well. He went six scoreless innings, did great with five Ks. The next game we played was against Shorecrest Prep. That was an 11-0 win. We used three pitchers that game. We started Kendall Hoffman, who did an amazing job. He was out there, great command of his fastball, his slider. All of his pitches worked really well. And then we brought in some of our guys, our newer guys, sophomores and juniors, who are just now making the team. And we even had great hits from guys like Cameron Cooper, Christian New, Evan Miller, and Alex Espelot. All those guys were doing great out there. Alex Espelot's been doing a great job at shortstop, making a lot of great plays out there as well.
You know, last year, now I know what, you guys are such a storied program. Did Boca Ciega beat you guys last year, and was this like a program changer for them?
I'm not too sure, Mike. That was before my time. That was before Ben Botham, the BB era.
They did beat you guys 1-0.
I have no recollection of what happened.
I'm being serious. That's a big accomplishment by a lot of these teams to beat Seminole, isn't it?
It certainly is, and that's something we tell our players.
Kind of taking on like beating Jesuit.
Yeah, that's something we tell all of our players, especially Coach Adam Warvick, our head coach. He always tells us that. Every school, when they come to Brinker Field, they always bring their best because they want to beat Seminole.
There's a bullseye on you guys.
Exactly. We're kind of like, the New York Yankees of Pinellas County sports. We're a team that has won the national championship, and we've gone on a little bit of a drought here, just kind of like the Yankees are.
Well, that's a great segue, because now we've got on the line, he's Jeff Mangold, the former head trainer of the New York Yankees. He's a Sioux City, Iowa native, Bishop Heelan alum, and as I was. And I'll tell you, Jeffrey, you would be impressed tonight. Today, my mother is down here, Sioux City, Iowa representation, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4 Sioux Cityans, 7 Iowans sitting about 10 feet from me here at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. It's just a Hawkeye party, basically, my man. How are you?
And they're all covered in skin, in 50 skin block, too, sunblock.
Yeah. I think Ma at 83, she kind of shies away from the beach, but she spent a good 20. How you been?
Yeah, I'm great, Mike. Good afternoon to you. Beautiful summer day, like here in Leland, North Carolina. That's where I am now.
Well, you know, it's that time of year, spring training. When you during your illustrious career, a very important time for you as the head trainer, and I'm curious on a couple of things as we look back. Of course, do a little plug for the book, because I'm going to bring up a couple of names that are in the book that you authored last year, and they've been a resounding success.
Yeah, Your Power in Pinstripes is the name of the book, and it just followed my career as a strength and conditioning coach with the Yankees and the Mets. And prior to that, some of the hard work that I put in collegiately at the University of Nebraska and the University of Florida on my way up to Major League Baseball and with the New York Yankees. And it's a good read, getting a lot of positive feedback, and people have enjoyed the read, and I think your listeners would also. Power in Pinstripes, Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com can be purchased.
So let's go back to the spring training piece of it. So as everybody else is, you know, taking some downtime, the off season for you in preparation for spring training as a trainer and strength and conditioning coach, probably is when you start really putting a lot of energy and focus into, you know, who's on the team, who potentially is going to be on the team, and the work that's ahead for you in that season. Talk a little bit about the preparation, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. And Ben Botham, you talked to Ben, he's best baseball Ben Botham with me. We've got a couple questions regarding players from the past and how you dealt with them during spring training.
Yeah, no, it's a great time of year to get down there. And to originally it was my first go around with the Yankees was back in 1984, so that was in Fort Lauderdale, and then we moved to Tampa, the great Tampa area there. And it's a great time where we'll have anywhere from 55 to 60 athletes be in camp. And you've got your Riley veterans, and you've got your high-strung rookies and kids that have been invited to camp. So there's a great mixture, but there's a lot of good energy. But it's the beginning of kind of a three-phase program of emotion through the year. There's the excitement of spring training, the green grass, the dew in the grass, the painted lines, the foul lines, and everybody's excited. But then that excitement wears off after about 4 or 5 days. Then you get excited for the regular season. You get all pumped up, all the banners and home opener and the excitement going on. And then that starts to wear off after 162 games. And then you get pumped up for the playoffs. So it's a long road, but you have to enjoy every day because baseball is so unique. Anything can happen any day.
Okay, so, you know, we talked about several players over our series of interviews, and who, name one that always came to camp and was in extreme shape, obviously worked in the off season, just committed. Throw a couple names out there, those guys, and then I'm going to ask on the other side, who did you know that was going to show up that was going to be a challenge and you're going to have to get them in shape in a short period of time? Because they basically might have threw down coldies and laid on the couch during the offseason.
Yeah, I would say originally my first year, 1984, that's what I was dealing with, guys like Lou Piniella and Greg Nettles and Oscar Gamble, Dave Winfield, Don Baylor, Rick Cerrone. Cerrone was one that... you always have to stay on top of a little bit, even though being as a catcher, he wasn't the fastest guy around and all, but you've got to get him ready to catch and ready to participate in all the games. So you got to be in shape. But guys that would show up that were always in shape, Joe Girardi stands out as one for sure. He was ready for anything. If we had 4 days, he'd be fine. Andy Pettit was another one. He was always set to go. He could throw 9 innings the first day of spring training. And so there's a wide variety of it. So you have to monitor the programs as such. But these last 10 years or so, 15 years, players realize they got to show up in camp in shape, ready to perform. Because otherwise, somebody's going to take your job.
You're talking about guys coming in shape, being able to throw 9 innings right out of the bat. A guy who doesn't seem to be able to do that is Tyler Glasnow right now, who came down with that oblique strain. Do you think this is him coming into the season not prepared, or is this a failure on the training staff?
You know, there's things that change once you come from even a high energy, high ramped up off season, getting prepped for spring training, you're going to have another level of adrenaline flow once you get in spring training and once you go out and throw batting practice or even the first game or two of live action. That's where adrenaline takes over, and you can try to mirror that energy in practice or preparation prior to camp, but that extra 10% is where guys get in trouble.
You know, we talked about it last year, the enormous number of injuries that the Rays had, and now they start the year out with a huge injury for them as far as maybe one of the best rotations in the Eastern Division, Eastern Conference this year. And do you do makeovers of the staff? Did you ever have, obviously, they never sent you down the road, but do a lot of pro programs when they start having a lot of injuries, A lot of the clubs, do they basically clean house like they do coaching staffs?
Well, after a while, yeah, they do. And it's not necessarily the strength and conditioning coach's fault or the organization's. Sometimes you just don't know what a player is doing on their own. That's why you can never have enough pitchers. People say, oh, those guys are loaded. They got six or seven starters. Well, you're going to need them. So it's a fine line in there. These injuries that keep coming up, again, I think it's adrenaline and game action and getting used to that game action. And it's trying to stay under control. And it's not easy. You hear the great players, like your friend Bernie Williams, that he says his success really started when the game slowed down for him. That he knew the situations, he knew his approach, and he was able to focus and concentrate, eliminate the crowd noise, and utilize the positive energy that he has and not use it negatively.
Yeah, speaking of Bernie, I was telling the band in the opening, he was over Steinbrenner Complex the other day working with the young guys in the batting cage. And I said, well, he probably just left Katiki Bar and had been jamming a little bit. And that's a diversity that is Bernie Williams.
Yeah, he was probably writing a song as he was riding over from the Tiki Bar over to practice. He was just probably thinking of a song to write.
Yeah, he is one talented man. Okay, so we've talked about it before, and guys like Roger Clemens. Now, he had his own trainer and would train in the offseason, guys like that. Did that cause a problem when then you tried to implement something in your system?
Yeah, there's a little conflict there. There's some can be the possibility of miscommunication of what the player is actually doing. He's not under your umbrella of activity all the time. And there could be a possibility of overtraining if he's done something on the side by themselves with his trainer. And also just the emotional factor from the team itself. To have a player have his own special performance coach or strength and conditioning coach. That it just doesn't set right. It's like Russell Wilson. It came out in the papers the other day. I saw that last year he with the Broncos that he had a separate office up in the coaches level on the second floor. That he had his own nutritionist. He had his own throwing coach. He had a chiropractor, and that just doesn't sit well with the team to get the special treatment.
Well, that wasn't a recipe for success for Russell Wilson this year in the Broncos.
Right.
You know that. Yeah. Now, did some of these players, and I think I read that or you had alluded to it, in the offseason, did some of the players ever want to compensate you to come to their hometown and work out with them?
Well, not to go and stay there too long, but there was a few years where I did fly around the country visiting a few players out in the West Coast and some guys that needed a little kick in the rear end and needed a little special attention. Gosh, what's his name? Lombardi, I think it was a young catcher years ago that came up. He's out in Portland, Oregon. And another young guy out near L.A., yeah, there were a few stops, but not to come out and house down with them and get some work done.
Would they request it, or did George send you?
No, that was from the boss. That was from the top-notch boss, George Steinbrenner.
I have a question. Wellesley, how did he show up? And I bet he was kind of a challenge probably to get fit.
Yeah, the Boomer looked the same in-season, off-season, no matter what. But he found a way to get the job done most of the time. As I told the story before, the first time I met Boomer was in 1998 when I was coming back to the Yankees for my second stint. 84 through 88 was my first time period, but then I came back in 98, and they flew me down to Tampa to see the facilities and see what was needed to be purchased and to make a go of it. So I'm in the minor league sign over by Raymond James Stadium, and Boomer and David Cohn were in the training room. So I walk in there and introduce myself, and we talk a little bit. And Boomer goes, "You know what? You're going to hear from the coaches that I'm overweight. I'm a little heavy, but you know what? I pitch much better when I'm heavy. So don't worry about me." I said, "Well," I said, "Well, it looks like you're getting ready to have a hell of a year." Well, they got to look at. Yeah,
he was one of my favorites to watch, though.
Yeah. He's a big guy, but he was a pretty good athlete, and he would just—he was tough to beat. Unbelievably huge, big curveball, big 12-6 yacker, and he had good control and a above-average fastball that he could spot it. And he was a grinder when he was on that mound.
We're talking to Jeff Mangold, former trainer for the New York Yankees. How many rings did you end up with, my friend?
Well, I got 3 World Series rings, and probably, I don't know, we got 3 or 4 American League Championship rings where we didn't win the World Series. So I was in 5 total World Series. I have 3 World Series rings, and close on a few, but you gotta finish the job off. That was disheartening, especially against Arizona, 2001.
Yeah, every time that I watched the captain in that series, I think of you.
Yeah, tell you what, it's strange to watch that series and to hear Derek talk so much, because as he states in that the ESPN series, that he was quite guarded when it came time for information. He was tight-lipped. So to hear him go ahead and expand on things was pretty unique.
Do we lose?
Are you there, Jeff?
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
We might have lost you.
Okay.
Oh, there you are.
There you are. You're in the hills in North Carolina. We lost you there for a minute.
Yeah, I'm right by the ocean. Must be a big power wave came in.
Oh, you're by the ocean?
Yeah, I'm just 20 minutes from the Wrightsville Beach.
Ah, beautiful.
Yeah. Right,
Ben had a question.
Well, earlier you had mentioned how players are able to slow down the game a little bit, and that was able to help, you know, kind of prevent the injuries. And a guy who maybe is taking heed of that kind of advice there is Wander Franco, who right now is in tip-top shape. So far he's been reporting that his body feels great, feels 100%. Even his first at-bat, he hit a 2-run home run. Do you think he's going to be one of the guys who's able to benefit from that, being able to slow down the game and kind of let the adrenaline do its thing?
Yeah, it could be. To be honest with you, I've maybe backed off a little bit from a lot of the names. Is he with the Rays or is he with the Yankees?
Yeah, Wander Franco's with the Rays right now. He was Rookie of the Year his first year. He batted just under 300. He's a great upcoming player for the Rays. He was injured last season quite a bit. He was one of the many on the injury list.
That's it. Yep. It depends what the injury was too. If it's a rib cage or the hamstring or quad. But some things just happened, especially with the Rays playing on that AstroTurf.
Well, these athletes today, do you think that they overdevelop their their muscles to the point where they're in the almost snap situation?
I'm sure some do, but it comes down to working on explosive power to generate force, and that some areas of the body you can't get too much hypertrophy, which is a term for muscle enlargement, like your pecs, and you gotta allow for a smooth swing and rotation. But you know, it comes down to be able to exhibit ground based power, either running, throwing, or hitting, generate from the ground.
So you mentioned, you brought up kind of turf, and I was kind of wondering, there's been some debate, especially on the football side of things, the debate between real grass or artificial. Are you a turf guy? Like, what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I like the grass. I think the players do too. I know that it's not AstroTurf anymore. It's that synthetic turf, but it's still not like grass.
Yeah, in high school, I know it's quite a difference when you go to some of these big name schools that have like the AstroTurf fields as opposed to us who have a mix of all kinds of different grasses growing. So I could only imagine on the big league field where they're amazing athletes how they're able to get away with that or play differently.
Yeah, but one aspect of it is definitely the first time into a new stadium, to a new field, is for the outfielders to get used to the flow of the ball on the ground. So if there's a base hit, sometimes it'll wobble, it'll stream instead of going straight. You got to know the hops, and you got to know how that ball rolls on that turf.
Well, Jeff Mangold, Sioux City Heelan's all-time legend in the world of trainers and basketball. You were a football and a basketball guy.
Football, basketball, baseball. You know, three sport guy. Yeah,
yep, the good old multi-sport days. Well, my friend, I appreciate you taking time to join us here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. As always, plug for the book one more time.
Yeah, Mike, it's Power and Pinstripes by Jeff Mangold and assisted by Peter Boddy. Mariano Rivera was gracious enough and write the foreword for me. And it's just filled with a lot of great stories, behind the scenes activity, some that people know about and some people know about more in depth than I take it. So it's a great, it's a good read.
By the way, you got your master's at Nebraska. What in the heck? We'll talk about that another day. What in the heck's happened to that program? You know, it used to be, you know, the storied weight training program, which you were an understudy in, and now they can't get any W's on about every program with the exception of baseball.
Yeah, they're getting thrown around by people. They're getting beat at the line of scrimmage. And they got a different leadership and the strength and conditioning program, and things changed a little bit. But you got to get the athletes.
During the Osborne days or your guys' days. All right, my man, have a great weekend. Enjoy the enjoy North Carolina, and I'll talk to you soon.
Mike, thank you. Have a great one.
All right, he's Jeff Mangold. Kind of cool to have it, you know, my alma mater, Sioux City Heelan, mom's alma mater.
Very cool.
Got a couple of traders here from East and Central, but besides that, very cool. And he's so nonchalant. Yeah, I got 3 World Series rings. I've got 5 American League championship leagues. All right, man. Great Saturday. Thanks for being back.
Oh, yeah. Love being out here with you.
Thanks to my friends and family from the great state of Iowa coming down. For Alex Bowen, Boca Ciega Baseball, Jake Perper, Jeff Mangold, Ernest Crumbly, Joe Boudreau, Big Ed, and Matt on the controls. I'm Mike Rickard. Thanks for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and wishing you and your families a fabulous weekend. God bless you. God bless America. And as always, be sure to have a championship week.